Let's go.
Bingetown, how we feeling today? It's your boy PD, aka PD, aka Producer Dave, back here with Kyle, Paul, and making his return to the pod, Alki. Today's podcast is one that we have been looking forward to for, I believe, now over a year, and we are so hyped to be covering it. It is going to be The Better Squid Game, Alice in Borderland, Season 2, Episodes 1 and 2 we are covering today. Now, I have to be a little honest. Even though it was great seeing our returning characters, except for maybe Water Rising, the first episode was probably my least favorite Alice in Borderland episode yet, but it does get picked up pretty quickly in episode 2 with the introduction of a new game master. And I was at the end of episode 2, Kyle brought it up. He was like, maybe we should do 3. And I was like, you're kind of right, but it would be a lot to cover with 3. So we're just going to stick to the first 2 right now. Just to give everyone a little background, we did cover season 1 a little over a year and a half ago. Water Rising is Tata,
because he's a boob.
But I don't want to say too much, but I do want to open the floor up to the quick first impressions with the first 2 episodes of season 2.
So you kind of gave mine out a little bit, so I can just, I guess, round it out. Actually, the first thing I'll say was I haven't heard that intro in a while. It's been a minute since I've podcasted with you, Dave. So it's nice to be on the mic together again. I guess to reiterate, episode 1 was fairly weak. Episode 2, I think, was really good. It finally felt like we're back in the world. And, you know, Arisu was making these decisions that we love to see him get stuck and making those kind of those choices. I really, really like the King of Spades. He might be my favorite.
Do you mean
character.
The King of Clubs or the King
clubs,
of Spades?
I'm sorry. The King of Clubs. He might be one of the best characters that's ever been introduced.
I'll emphasize that. I really think like him and Hatter from season 1 are just like neck at neck right now.
They're really good. So I really enjoyed, like, the episode 1 started and I was like, fuck yeah. Like, oh, we're back with all the characters. Wasn't great overall. And then episode 2 was very good.
Yeah, I absolutely felt so happy just seeing the crew together. They're just sitting in the intersection waiting for everybody. And, you know, I was just looking at them and I was like, what a formidable squad.
Water Rising is the only downside to their squad. Otherwise, this squad is literally perfect.
Yeah, which was Chishia, right?
Is that Chishia, yep, Chishia.
Chishia, Kuina, and then Arisu and Usagi. I mean, those four that were just chilling were so good. And then Anne pulls up.
Yeah, I was going to say Anne, man.
And then fucking Tata puts his head out the window. And I was like, ugh. So I didn't know he was going to be in season 2. I don't know how I feel about it. But I'm gonna look at him with a new attitude. Yeah, I'm not going to hate him for what he did. Hopefully he's grown.
He's going to die in episode 3.
The most cuttable character out of this squad for sure. Like, everyone has a purpose except for Water Rising. There's nothing there for him.
Yeah, and we call him Water Rising because in the season 1 coverage, when Arisu's having his initiation and Anne is at the same game and the water's rising and they have a light bulb and they don't know what to do, and the water starts rising and fucking Tata goes, oh my God, the water's rising. And it's like yeah.
Birth of a nickname right there.
Yeah, so if we ever refer to Water Rising, we're talking about his bitch ass. But just about episode 1, I don't know if I had low expectations, but like I kind of enjoyed it the more it went on. And when I say low expectations, I already heard from you guys that episode 1 wasn't the best. But at the same time, you know, there's so many feelings because it's like, dude, it's kind of bullshit that it's just like a slaughter. They even say it like in the beginning, it's just nonstop like gunfire. But in the end, it's kind of a cool concept. We'll get into it more, but it felt so good to be back with season 2.
Alki.
I'm really excited to be part. Thank you, PD, for the introduction. Yes, I never heard you've been called that before, so that's what I'm going to call you from now on.
It's floated around multiple podcast episodes. It's just so random.
That's pretty funny. But I'm excited to dive back into the Alice in Borderland world. It's it was awesome season 1. I think season 1 ended on such a high note. I have to be honest. Besides the intro scene, which was obviously crazy with the massacre, like the game, the King of Spades, it was a little slow for me. And I love the episode 2 game with the King of Clubs, and I love the characters that they introduced, but I was getting a little tired of like the long monologues and shit. But I guess it's like this is kind of like a training arc in a way for these guys, because it's the next stage of the game. The stakes are even higher than before, which is hard to fathom, but it's true. So, you know, there's got to be some growth here. And, you know, it's kind of like I coach basketball, right? I use my games sometimes as practice because I don't practice that much with the kids. The games sometimes have to be like practice. This is kind of the feeling I'm getting with this, with the King of Clubs encounter that they're having. It's a, it's an opportunity for them to kind of fill into their roles and see how they're going to move forward. And I don't like how Usagi's all emo, but yeah,
terrible.
But still,
I agree with you on like this being kind of like a training arc. Like Arisu is now meeting first time like someone that's like a game master and holds actual position in this quote unquote world that we're in right now. And so he himself, even in episode two, we'll get into it. Like he's testing out the game master, the King of Clubs. The King of Clubs is testing him back. So it's a little more intricate than what we've seen in the past, whereas it's usually just been everyone on like everyone with visas versus themselves. But now we're taking it up a notch with everyone with visas versus the quote unquote citizens. But enough just chitter chatter. Let's get right into it. So episode one picks up right where we left off last season. So last season, we get the big blimps with the face cards hovering all around the city. Is it Tokyo or are we just in Japan?
It's Tokyo, I think.
I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure it's Tokyo because of the where they are, like the square. They mentioned in episode one when they're like, when it's, we have our actual crew with Karube and I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, the Virgin.
I think that, this is a side note, but cool little Easter egg, unintentional Easter egg. I'm pretty sure that's like Shibuya. Like Shibuya Square.
Let's meet at Shibuya Station or
Shibuya. Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty sweet because JJK, there's a huge arc. It's called Shibuya Arc. And I just see it all the time in other anime. And it's just
might be in Haikyuu too, to be honest.
Maybe. Like, yeah. I just think it's so cool that it's actually the actual Shibuya, not a like an animated version,
fake version.
That's good. You know, but we also could be dead wrong because that's
right.
My memory for like at least like you said like a year ago.
But so like I said, like Paul mentioned, we open with Arisu, Usagi, Chishio, and Kuina and Water Rising. They're about to start a game when a bunch of people from Bichu end up pulling up, and they're all about to get this game started. They didn't get any rules read to them. They're kind of all collaborating and talking when all of a sudden one person just gets absolutely mowed down by like some 50 cal sniper in the distance. One, two, three people are just getting massacred. And our squad is just now in a frenzy. They're just running around trying to figure out to get a safe spot. Arisu is still trying to save people, which like kind of blows my mind because we're now in the face cards, man. It's like, we need you around, Arisu. Like, we don't need this time of you saving random characters who are going to die anyway, you know? Like, it's just to emphasize his good nature.
Yeah, you've seen enough anime to know that he's obviously going to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, if I was there bleeding out, bullet holes, I hope somebody would help me out. So, Arisu is just, you know, doing to others as he would like to be done unto himself. I butchered that. Whatever.
I actually, when I first started the first episode, I thought that I clicked the wrong episode. I thought I clicked season one.
Yeah, it's funny because they really throw us right into the action, and this whole episode, more than half of it is like running from gunfire. But like Aoki said, it is kind of slow. It's weird. Like, it shouldn't be slow because it's like a chase the entire time. But
yeah. They keep getting separated. So Chishio is the first one to get separated from the group. And I think the reason, at least the mangaka or whoever the director, just realized that this squad is way too good together. So we need a way to just like break up Chishio and Arisu right off the bat, because otherwise they're going to solve this game in like 2 seconds. At least that's how I took it. So yeah. Chishio immediately gets separated while Arisu and Water Rising Kuina Usagi get in a car. They're kind of discussing the new games, just saying that it's unfair that they were just told to start this game and they didn't get any rules, and that it's just, they describe it as a literal massacre. It's just not even, there's no rules or anything. It's just people getting mowed down.
Yeah. Imagine you make it through the first phase of all the number cards, you get here and you're the first person that just gets obliterated. Like, you had no prior signs of it coming. Like, maybe they shouldn't have run underneath the blimp. I guess that's the only warning they would have gotten. Instead of going towards it, they shouldn't have gone towards it. But like, I don't know. It literally like they were saying it felt like a massacre, like there's no rules. But then you kind of look back at episode one, the first game they go into, they didn't really know any of the rules there. Like random people just happened to die because they ran through a door. So, but it's weird though, because at the same time, everybody that made it this far is either really good at the games or just lucky that they
You're absolutely right. Because if you managed to get this far, you probably have some sort of experience and capability to some degree, and then to just be taken out in the flash of just a gunfire is completely unfair. But they are in the car, Odyssey especially, trying to determine how the games, these new games, are working. He's kind of determined that each card has their own game master, which kind of makes sense. And they kind of hypothesize that, if you know, what happens if we win, do we leave? And Odyssey kind of gets a little giddy thinking at the idea that he has a chance to leave after beating these games, but he has to beat, what is it, 12 games first, and they're all face cards. So, and the rules we do find out still apply from the original or the first season of, you know, clubs are team games, hearts are betrayal, spades is
physical,
and then so they do follow that. So that was really good. But
I just think, honestly, the reason why I didn't like episode one is that all of the gunfire and the car chase was very corny and high plot, like plot armor stuff. Okay, that's how it works sometimes. But it was
slow because there was so many flashbacks, and I get the purpose of these flashbacks, but it's like, I don't think
one even got hurt.
I'm thinking the same thing. Like, I know the show isn't realistic because like it's this dystopian murder game, but there's got to be some effort of realism in it. And like the King of Spades is just shooting left and right. People all around the main crew are dying, but they're fine and they never get hit. And
the first time that he pulls up side by side of the car, like he decides to like, you know, ram them versus
after one shotting everybody.
Yeah. It was like, bro, I mean, I just feel like the direction. I mean, obviously it's easy to criticize sitting in my chair in my apartment. It just felt like the stakes were high, but they weren't high at all.
No, like the car chase itself.
I wasn't worried. Like, you weren't worried.
Like, if Water Rising had been shot right off the bat, like, then I'm like, okay, we have some intensity
like,
here.
Like, the crash, like, they weren't wearing seatbelts, and they like, flipped the car, and they all
nobody was even cut. Kalina was cut on the arm.
Yeah, I would have liked to see someone actually, like, you know, they have to like go back and save someone because they're unconscious still or something at that level. And that it's just nothing. They were running literally into gunfire at certain points.
Yeah.
And I was like, come on, man.
And again, also,
I've never been in a situation, so what the fuck would I do? But it felt obvious that they ran straight into the middle of the street while they were getting shot. And I was like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, run into a building and you're good, instead of just running in a straight line away from them. But like the car chase, not to rip on it more, but it's just like the car was 20 feet away and every single one of his bullets is like hitting the car frame, but nobody's actually getting hurt. And
he had a perfect shot up until that moment. And then he starts, and of course, once they start shooting at the car, then it's all the bullets are getting hit in the car, you know?
Like, also, I think the actual car chase, there's one continuous shot and he lets off like 60 rounds. And I'm like, dude, I just saw your magazine and it was this big. Like,
I don't have a note that says, oh, okay, so he just has unlimited bullets and guns.
Yeah, he's a cheat code because he's the King of Spades. So
I'm interested to see. I mean, obviously he's this hooded figure. King implies that he's a guy, but I mean, they hide his identity. Is there any reason for it? Who can say? But honestly, the most interesting part, or I guess maybe the two interesting parts, is just that I like the reminder that Anne is a fucking straight badass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's like, get the fuck out of the driver's seat. Like, let me get in here. And she's like hitting the clutch and like actually doing shit. Mm-hmm. And the other one is that we lose Chishtia, but he has a comment like right in the beginning where it's like, it's something about hiding behind the cars. And he says something like as if I'd forget about hiding behind a car, or like, oh, they're doing that so I'd forget about hiding behind a car.
I think what he was saying was that gunfire is an anti-tank weapon. So I would forget about hiding behind the cars if I were you, because the bullet's going to go right through it.
Yeah. I was going straight confirmation bias of, cause I made the prediction in our season one stuff that Chishtia was in on this.
Yeah.
Like, he is like testing himself by letting himself be in the games, and that he's actually, at this point, now we know the term citizens. I think that he is a citizen, or maybe even a higher level of a hierarchy that we haven't found out about yet in this new world, I guess you could say. I'm sticking with that theory still, but okay, I definitely interpreted that sentence in complete confirmation bias of my own theory, so I appreciate you.
I actually, he was like running from bullets with his hands in his pockets, and I was like, that was just like a dumb detail that for some reason just detail. Annoyed me.
It's an anime
I was going to say the same thing, Alki. He almost never rushes. Like, he only like slightly brisk walks. Like, you never see him actually trying hard.
Yeah.
And it's because he's just like supposed to be chill and not worried at all. Which again, Kyle,
that could add kind of lean theory, yeah.
I wanted to talk about that a little bit more just because this is the last time we see Chishiya, at least in the first two episodes. So I wanted to bring a little bit more light on if you guys, Paul and Alki specifically, if you guys think Kyle's theory is getting a little bit more credible, or is it just a pure coincidence that he got separated?
It could explain the fact that they didn't get shot.
If he's a game master and he has like his close minions by him,
he has an invisible shield type thing.
No,
you know?
they split though. Like, so when they all get into the car, when Anne pulls up, the grenade comes in and he dips. So that he's not even there the whole car chase.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably most likely what Dave said, that taking it from like the actual perspective of writing the story, that him and Arisu are probably too OP together.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think one thing
is having to separate them in some realistic way. So that got achieved.
Yeah, I would like to believe that it would be really cool if he actually was involved in some capacity, though. I mean, it'd be a great layer to the whole story.
If I'm honest, that's how I watch the show now. I assume he's in on it because of all the theory talks we had.
He definitely has a bigger role than what he's leading on to have right now, is where I'm at, definitely.
He's just too good.
Yeah.
At the same time, like he makes these like grenades and gave one to Kuina and was like, you know, pop it if you're in a jam or emergency or whatever the fuck.
Did she ever use that actually?
No, she actually left it.
We saw it at their base camp. She like has it on the table.
That's coming back 100%.
Oh yeah, definitely. So like I don't know. Does he like know that that's going to come in handy in the future because he's in on the games, and that's why he's like, yo.
His intuition is like, if we're talking like D&D, it must be like 20. It's got to be like so absurd.
There's another element, I think, that like we don't know how long he's been there compared to Arisu and Usagi and stuff. And I think that's a really interesting detail that they're continuously leaving out.
It makes things more interesting, especially with the whole visa versus citizen thing now, because if like to go off what you're saying, like because we haven't gotten that backstory, like it's very possible he just comes out and is like, I've been here my whole life because I'm a citizen, so I know generally how these games work.
Could be.
But to keep moving, after a long car chase and Anne getting separated from the group, the others find a hiding spot, just some random hotel, and they each fan out to find their own supplies. I think Water Rising and Kuina are a group that are going to be looking for a car, whereas Arisu and Usagi are getting food. And this is where my hate for episode one starts to build a little bit, with Arisu and Usagi are getting chummy in this like little mini mart. I will say though, really quickly, I love the flashbacks with our boys, like the OG squad. I'm totally blanking already on their names.
Carbe
and
Virgin. Those moments really tickled my fancy. And especially when Odyssey is talking about like eating manga and just having some ramen.
Eating manga.
Yeah. Eating some ramen and reading some manga. I love the little intricacies there. But Usagi sees an article that is presumed to be about her father attempting suicide. And this is where we get a little bit more into the perspective of Usagi, who we find out isn't crazy to return back to, quote unquote, their world. It sounds like she is willing to just put her life at risk every single day to just not go back to the real world, which I hated. I'm just going to start the rant now, because I hated it because it felt like we were never alluded to this side of her in season one. Like, we got the whole backstory of, you know, the Usagi father, and that really definitely had a huge effect on Usagi and her view on the world. But it never was to the point where I felt like she never wanted to return back to the real world. And we get like 15 minutes of just this whole rehashed backstory of the father, and This is where it lost me for episode one. I just, again, this felt like it came out of nowhere for Usagi, and I just wasn't crazy about it.
Yeah, it's interesting because when we meet Usagi in season one, she helps Arisu not give up.
Yes.
Like, she teaches Arisu to fight and live on. I don't think she ever says so we can get back to the real world, but she says like so we can beat this game, like all this other stuff. So it's like all of a sudden, yeah, like why do you want to stay in this world where you're being hunted?
And it brings more annoyance to me when they're like talking about game plans and beating games, and Usagi's like, yeah, let's beat this game. I'm just like, you don't care. You do not actually care at the end of the day if you beat this game or not.
See, I kind of disagree. I think she prefers this world. I don't think that means she wants to die, though.
I guess because there are people that we do know. Like, yeah, like Miragi was like totally in to be in this world for the rest of his life.
I think the Hatter liked it too, yeah, right?
Yeah. So you given the chance, do you think she would become a citizen?
I guess this whole thing just comes to me that like that it was just never alluded to in season one. That's my main issue with it, I guess. But like, I get where you're coming from.
No, I actually, look, I agree with you because it is out of left field. She was like Mrs. Survival. You know, she helped him so much. It's funny. I personally don't think that she wants to die, but they're making it seem like that, at least in the last couple episodes and like her internal struggles, like when they're like, oh, really, what do you guys
really think? This so, isn't
the, huh? I think what you were saying, she doesn't want to die necessarily. She just doesn't want to go back to that old world.
I agree, but I still think they're making her seem just super like, what's the point?
She's not like suicide. Yeah. It's
yeah.
Not like
she's
suicide,
like, what's the point?
But yeah, she just questions, I guess, where
she
she's
just
at.
Seems to have lost her drive a little bit, like her inspiration. Mm-hmm. You know, I think she'll probably get that the next episode or something. But
yeah, I mean, that's probably reasonable that at least one character has that. I feel like, I mean, Tata, Water Rising, we see in episode two, which we'll talk about, he has a very weak mental fortitude, it seems. There's like, he obviously gets broken fairly easily by the game, but I guess I'm a little shocked that this is such a hated thing that happened. I didn't think anything of it.
I
was my only thought was that it's 100% her dad's coming back and is going to show up.
So yeah.
I think that
was my big note here, was this begs the question of whether her father is in the world with them or not.
What if he's Kings of Spades just slaughtering people? Sick.
Holy shit.
Like, that's his revenge on like the world for turning against him, is like he just gets to fucking murder everyone.
So at the end of season one, when we were talking theories, I theorized like people get pulled into the games because they're not like contributing to society. Like everybody was like, they were skipping school. I don't want to go through everybody, but like even the one chick in season one, she was basically banging her way up the ladder. So that's, you know, frowned upon, blah, blah, blah. Mm. The rock band that we meet, who's like the king of clubs, maybe they're like, oh, they're a rock band, do drugs. They're not good for society. So that's why they got pulled into the
But
game.
They're citizens, though. Like, they have a different angle, but I'm with your theory. I'm with your theory.
Yeah. I wonder if they like survive the games, if you become a citizen, if you survive games long enough, or if they just got pulled in randomly. I'm really excited to learn about that. But that being said, yeah, sorry, I got on a tangent there. Yeah. I think Usagi's dad could have been pulled into the games because they're like, dude, all you do is fucking go climb mountains. You're not doing anything for society. Like, what are you doing? Killing yourself up here? That's not going to help.
See,
that'd be cool.
As you were talking, though, I'm kind of thinking like, so how many years ago was it? Like, can we imply that he got sent here? Was
Usagi,
it like at least 10? Like, Usagi was a little girl, like,
no.
Right? Wasn't
Usagi
a child?
Usagi said a little bit before I came here it happened. So yeah. I think it was only
a
few months.
Wound.
I think it's
a
few months
for sure.
I would guess within a year. But Paul, like, to your theory, what was Usagi doing that was so
non-productive? She was really depressed.
Like,
she was just
like
laying on the ground
up
and not doing anything. She was laying on the ground of her apartment.
So is climbing mountains.
You're depressed
because
your dad's dead. Fuck you. Go survive in this game.
We gave you 3 days and you're still lying there.
Look at this piece of shit climbing mountains. Get him over here. Let's kill him.
Get him in the game.
Like, what?
It could be something like that. There's got to be a reason why they're dragged in. Like, it's not. I think I don't want
it
to be random.
They were trying to piece it together because There were two people. I mean, who was it? Like,
that was Kuina.
Maybe. Yeah, that might be cool.
Because Kuina and Water Rising are talking, and they're actually having some.
Oh, those two.
They're having somewhat parallel conversations.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, he is saying, like,
that's not so honestly, bad.
Like, yeah, like, I miss, not miss, but like, I wouldn't be so upset, like, going back to like paying bills and all.
Yeah, he would rather pay bills than obviously have to fight for his life every day. Yeah.
Speaking of this fucking scene, he picks the worst fucking car to protect yourself from gunfire. I was so mad at him. I was just talking about how I'm going to have a new lens to look at him as long as he doesn't do anything stupid. And he gets a fucking convertible. Fucking convertible.
I didn't even piece that.
I didn't even think about that either. Yeah.
Usagi says it immediately when he pulls up. It's like, we're exposed. And he's like, oh, it's the only one I could get started. It's
like, Queen is like, nah.
Yeah, Kuina calls him out. It's like, no, you're fucking stupid. This is why you're the goddamn goalie in fucking the next game.
Yeah.
Which so, bites him in the ass.
Yeah, definitely.
So the main thing, I guess, here that I also got annoyed with was that Arisu tried to be compassionate with Usagi, and then she just completely rejected him. Was like, how can anyone understand my pain? And it's like, I don't know, maybe ask the guy who just lost two of his best friends, like, brutally in a game. It's like
that you helped to get out of a depressive streak.
Yeah, so again, not crazy about this Usagi scene, but I think we've covered it enough. So
I think it's going to be the foundation of this season going forward. Like, there's going to be a moment where they flash back to it and Usagi's going to be like, you know, I do want to live, I do want to go back with you or something like that. The
Nico Robin, I
was, yeah, I was gonna say that honestly, but
I was chanting Kiss in my living room and they went the opposite way, but we'll get there.
Yeah. Also, does Usagi look just absolutely incredible to anyone else? Like, bro, she looked great in season one, but all of a sudden she's like,
yeah, bro, they all aged a little bit or something. Yeah,
you can see the year and a half.
Arisu looks tall, if I'm
honest. Arisu looks, you know who aged, like, looks bad? Fucking Water Rising Tata. He looks old. Like, I swear to God, he gained.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him so much at first.
Algie
literally thought like there were new actors because like everyone looks like aged up.
They probably filmed it like 2019, 2018. I mean,
it's been 2 years probably.
It's been a long time since the first season was filmed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Before we get any farther, I do want to jump back just to the beginning because there was one or two things that I wanted to bring up. One, I just fucking love Arisu's facial expressions whenever he's running away from gunfire, even like playing the games. Like, they're not pretty, but they're like, I guess, realistic because, you know, he's not worried about what it looks like. He's like running for his life. It's fucking hysterical.
Mouth wide open.
Yeah. And he looks terrified. And speaking of like when he's gaming in the flashback, did you guys see?
Yeah, he's like L.
Oh, his name was Alice. He named his avatar Alice.
That's sick.
But the way he was sitting definitely was like L.
It reminded me of L. And I also did see that at the bottom of his screen. I actually said it to Luke and Dave when we watched.
I was wondering if I feel like that flashback was so unnecessary, but it got me thinking, like, if Arisu is like an experienced, like, we'll call it like first person shooter, Call of Duty kind of style, like, gamer, then maybe that kind of game will help him determine what the King of Spades game is eventually. Yeah.
It already helped him in the King of Spades game because, like, when he was running from the gunfire, he, like, had the flashback to the game and was kind of, like, doing the same path that he was running.
Yeah, he seemed to relate it. What do you guys think the connection is there? What's the connection there between the video game he used to play and the King of Spades games? Like,
I think he's just trying to think of the mentality. So it's like, what was Arisu's mentality when, like, you're just going around in COD, just like mowing people down? Like, is there like a strategy to it? Are you running around just doing it blindly? But I that's just me, like, just blindly.
I took it more of like the contrast between his old life and his current life.
Yeah.
Like, his old life, it was fake and he was in control. And now he's the one that's being hunted and running around and it's real.
And awful.
Yeah. And legitimately terrible. Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say was, did you guys watch the title sequence at all?
Yep.
Yes.
Now we have the blimps going. And I don't know if at the very end you like see the city. And it's almost like zoned off like a checkered board with like red zones and non-red zones. I don't know if that was literally just trying to say this is a game and like the city is the chessboard, or if that was like zoned off areas or whatever.
Nowadays, like with TV shows, like everything matters. Like, even if it's a title sequence, so, like, you can get some information out of a title sequence for sure.
Definitely.
And it's, so, I mean, the decisions they make are on purpose. They're conscious decisions of what their graphics they're choosing to put in there. So
yeah. I love how they're just throwing down all the face cards of all the suits. It was really well done.
Definitely. I liked all the red A's in the names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was cool.
Looked very sharp.
All right. So the four meet back up after that whole spiel of Usagi being the worst for the time being. And they're tracking the King of Spades using the blimp in the sky. Arisu pitches the idea of hiding from the King of Spades by playing other games, since game masters most likely will not interfere with one another because they have to follow, you know, strict rules to prevent essentially the game being ruined for the citizens, I guess, if you want to call it like that. But Arisu also thinks that the game masters will be able to provide information on the world that they are currently in. And Arisu votes to go to the one that is farthest away, the King of Clubs, who he believes will hold a lot of info because they are a king, quote unquote. And this, like I said earlier, the suits still follow the original rules, so it'll be a team game. And that was another deciding factor for them, is if we can play the game together, then let's just fucking go for it. So that is where they're at right now. And they drive to the game, where they are greeted somehow by a still alive Naragi, who has chosen to join the game with the four of them. It's a 5-player game. And so we kind of got it spoiled in the, I think it was the season 2 trailer, that Naragi is still alive, which we had talked about off pod a little bit. Like, it just, there, I don't think there was a need for it really. And especially with where the episode 2 kind of ends, it just seems like there was no need to bring back Naragi. Like, if they needed a 5th player, they could have easily just brought in, I guess, Anne or Chishia. But again, that might have made it too overpowered. But
a new character.
Or a new character.
A new character would have been cool. I mean, granted, we have only seen 2 episodes, so we don't know what actually happens in episode 3 and like what maybe is the end of his story, because he is, as we find out, he's dying. But I think a new character would have been cool too, and that it would have been a similar anchor to him, because he's kind of his own guy and does his own thing. Right. But like, having a new character that they don't have any teamwork with is like somewhat like same but different, essentially.
I wasn't crazy about it, especially with how he went out last season. Like, he was burned and shot, and he's still
Agony just tackles him into the fire and stuff like that. So I was like, oh my god, Naragi's alive. Is Agony alive? Because I love that fucking man. And I want to see
that
him.
Would be sick. I would be so into
got,
that.
He got lit the fuck up. There's no way. But yeah, I was honestly shocked when I saw Naraki was still alive. I was like, bullshit. But at the same time, it's kind of cool to have him around a little bit again, just because they already have existing chemistry.
The dynamic was a little interesting for the.
Yeah, I thought it would have been a cool flair to have this old villain as part of the squad for like the time being, until Chishia shows back up, or Anne, or whatever.
Yeah, and he tries to rape Usagi again.
That was a little bit. See, that I was like, come on now, especially like, was a little ridiculous,
especially with how we saw him like kind of accepting the team chemistry and was kind of having signs of potentially there being a redemption arc. But then he goes and does that. I mean, there's
then
no
he
redemption.
Coughs up blood and he's like, fuck it, I'm just gonna continue being a piece of shit. He literally says it.
So the 5 of them enter the shipping yard and are greeted immediately by the boss himself, the King of Clubs, Kiyuma, and his goonies. We have, I don't think we should spend too much time on their names, honestly, but it was Shitara Uta, which shout out to One Piece, because Uta is the name of the girl in One Piece, and she's a musician, and so I thought that was cool. And then we have Maki and Gouken, and the music that hits here when like his little booty comes out of the screen, I'm just like, I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, now I'm fucking feeling the Alice in Borderland return. Like, all that shit that was happening earlier on was like, it was a little slow, and then when the music kicks in, I'm like, let's get the fuck into episode 2.
I think they executed his entrance perfectly. I mean, everybody loves him, even though he's the bad guy. And I could just see the gag panel of the manga in my head, when they're like, dude, you're scaring them, put on pants. And he's like, turns around like, what? Why would I do that? Like, we're meant to be bad. Like, clothes are a human construct. Like, I can see that gag panel. Like, I'm ready. I'm so excited to read this. I haven't, because I know we've been waiting to cover season 2. But I want to read the manga so badly.
Apparently, it's pretty, like, shot for shot, like, dead on accurate.
Really?
To the manga.
Yeah. That was what I wanted to ask.
Yeah, I think...
How can
I actually even read, like, I think it was in a bookstore a couple weeks ago, and they had like the first Alice in Borderland book, and I was kind of just like flipping through it, and everything to me was dead shot for shot almost. So Yeah, it's good that they have like legitimate source material to pull from.
I read
it's
the first
completed, right? Sorry, yeah. Paul.
I read the first couple chapters, and like the games was the intro game was just way more insane and different. But for pretty much, it's like the exact same things happen, and it's pretty tight. And I really wanted to keep reading, but I can't.
That's what I was gonna bring up when talking about Usagi and us interpreting it as like a complete almost 180 of her character of like, was that, I wonder if that is something that happens in the manga, and maybe they didn't hit it hard enough in season one. So they had to like, okay, this is part, a big part of her character. So we need to get into it. Or that was something like in the transition between season one and two of like, what are we going to do in the future? Maybe that was something they created.
I was wondering the same thing, Kyle.
No way to answer that question, obviously, but just something I thought about.
If it was in the manga, it wouldn't bother me. If they added it, it'd be kind of lame, but
do you think I'm also thinking maybe the year and a half that we had of not like I hadn't watched Alice in Borderland in literally a year and a half. So it's like, I could be missing some things. Like it might be a lot. I might feel better about it having transitioned from immediately watching the end of season one into season two. That's like fair. It might be different, but
yeah, but there were so many things like when they were had to run all the way through the tunnel.
Yeah, but that still kind of flowed off where they picked off last season.
That's probably the actual worst episode of Alice in Borderland.
It's a really cool game, really? But like the plot holes. How do they fucking drive that bus through all those parked cars?
Yeah, I
mean, there were definitely some logical mishaps.
That's
there.
What ruined it.
There was a Jaguar.
More than half the time is gone, and Arisu runs back with pushing a motorcycle in less time and has enough time to drive. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let's move on.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Let's
wrap up. I want to wrap up episode one with the fact that Arisu asks Kiyuma directly, who are you? And we get a very interesting response that we've already alluded to throughout the episode. But Kiyuma literally responds, we are the citizens of this country. And the episode ends, which makes sense that they are citizens because everyone that we've been introduced to so far is on a visa. So I don't know why that, like, it just never really processed to me that they could be in a different country. But we'll transition this right into episode two because it gets a little bit more in depth. And well, we open us specifically in episode two with Kiyuma and his Goonies rocking out as a band, honestly jamming out. They're fucking crushing it. Was not expecting the English, to be honest, but love that. But we get introduced to a little bit more of the characters. Shitara, like the longer haired guy, and Kiyuma tells us that he created the game and admits too that it is a brand new experience for them too, because they haven't played it together as a team, which maybe I wrote my notes a little too vague, but that sentence caught my eye a little bit because it sounds like they're able to either practice games or they've been in games before and this is their first time competing in games as a team. So I don't know how you guys took it.
Yeah, the way I took it is literally this was their first time playing as citizens, but I don't know. I could be completely wrong.
They said I thought that too, but they specifically said playing this game as a team. I'm pretty sure.
But that maybe they were played other games.
That's what I'm saying. Is like I wrote it down because I thought it was just an interesting note that do you think based off what we've seen in this episode, do you think they've played games before or do you think this was legitimately like their first time?
So one other thought that I had was maybe they were like all the other players and had to play through the number card games and play through the face card games and the whole band survived and they became citizens. And now like this is the first time as citizens playing a game together. But
so great point, Paul. What I immediately thought of was I think if you beat the game, quote unquote, the game, the owners or the leaders are going to come up to you and be like, hey, we're going to pitch you an offer. You can either stay here as a citizen or you can go back to your world and I guess like visit on maybe not visit because I'm sure a lot of people don't want to visit back again. But I was kind of thinking that because there was so much talk, especially with Arisu, of like wondering what's going to happen after the games, I just brought up an idea of mine that thinking that if you beat all the games, maybe you're offered to live here if you would like as a winner.
I think they're former players.
Like they used to be, they were on visas and they all joined together like Chota, but they all happened to live together.
Yeah, they've survived and then they got far enough. And I think
Do you think the band was them and their like the our world, or do you think that was them as a band in their citizen country?
It's before they got to the games.
Yeah, I think they made that clear.
Right? Yeah, I think it's before they got to the games. Somehow they got to the games. I don't think you can just walk in a citizen.
Yeah,
unless you're like part of the creating group.
Unless you're like the son of like the creator.
Yeah, like I don't think so. There's no way. That would be too lame. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they definitely earned
the creator like Chishia is.
Yeah, Chishia's son.
I mean, they definitely earned that spot as citizens. That's, in my opinion, why he said this is our first time playing this game together as citizens.
Yeah.
So they're like, and also you have to realize this is Arisu and Groups and Co's first time at this level with the face cards, right? So they've, you can kind of wonder, but they might have just been literally chilling at that storage container park this whole time.
Oh, like while
the other games were going on. You know what I mean? So
that's why I was thinking, like,
sitting around.
That's why I was thinking maybe the band was a part of them, like, being like, maybe they formed the band while being citizens, and that was them like having their own Beachu type party kind of thing.
They played incognito at Beachu, just in masks. My question is going to be, I thought they said that they just made up the game. Like, didn't they create the game?
Yeah, the long haired dude.
How could they have both created the game and also played it as non-citizens? That makes no sense.
Well, I don't think this specific game as non-citizens. I'm just saying they definitely played games as non-citizens as survivors.
Shatara, I think it was his name, the long-haired dude.
Yeah.
I think Kiyuma did say that he created it and he had the idea.
Yeah, he created
And again, this literally just might be the first time they're actually playing against players. Like, they might literally have just become citizens and like This is the first time defending the town.
You'd have to have some experience playing games to be able to create a game.
Yeah.
I think that this is probably what it is. You're a player like Arisu and Co. right now. You get enough cards to advance. You get opportunity to become a citizen. And then the perk of being a citizen is creating a game. And depending how good you were, maybe that's how good your face value card will be.
Dude, what if Usagi just, like, Arisu and Usagi are here the whole time and they get to the end. And Usagi's like, I'm staying and just ultimate villain. And Arisu's like, all right, I'm going to protect everyone back in the real world. And it's just final clash, yeah. Usagi, Arisu.
I definitely think Usagi's just like going to stay if she gets the choice now.
Obviously, I think as a citizen, if in this moment after this game, if she was offered to be a citizen, she would take it right now. But I think by the end of maybe season two, she'll have different thoughts, but we'll see. Now, this is where we can decide if we want to waste a lot of time or a little time.
Nah,
essentially,
we don't
the game
need to,
is called Osmosis.
Yeah, and we don't need to explain the game.
Okay, so I'm going to skip literally half page of notes.
Yeah, like we all watched the episode. You guys watched the episode, so you know the rules. Just
there's three ways to get points: battle, item, base.
Yeah, that was awesome the way he said all that. But the only big rules are if you touch the other person's base, you get all those fucking points. And if you lose, if you run out of points, you die.
Yeah, if your points fall below zero, you die and you're shot from the sky from a laser.
My question is going to be, and this is not anything about the show, but so say it was, I guess, what, there's five people on a team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we'll count Luke in this, but he's not here to plead his case. But how would we distribute the points?
I think Arisu was dead on. I think the people who are slower gets less points, and I think the people who are faster are more elusive.
Slower gets more points.
Paul, I see you flashing a list. Did you make a little list?
I did. I paused right now because I was like, I wonder how I would like play myself and see if I was like close to a Arisu strategy yet. And no, I was not at all. The only thing I had goalie at minimum points, 100. And I was like, okay, I think everybody was going to have that. Yeah. And I was like, all right, we're going to have like two kings that have like all the points, like 4,500, 4,500, and then two bitches with like 450, 450.
I'll be honest, I'm taking 4,500.
That's essentially what he did, though.
That's what he did.
But I didn't have them running in pairs. I didn't have.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay.
The only thing I said, I just said that I would get the most points if we played.
I think it's going to go to me. I'm sorry.
How would we win? I think we'd win.
Yeah.
Okay, nice. My original thought about how they would play was that they would give Usagi the most points.
Yeah.
I thought that's what he was going to decide.
So
but then when they explained it, I was like, ah, this guy's smart.
Yeah, I don't. So, what was the point of giving the fastest runners the fewest points? Because they would be less likely to get caught and tagged.
They wouldn't get touched, and if they were to get touched, like
they can outrun.
Yeah, they can.
See, outrun. In my head, I'm like, all right, give the fastest runners the most points because they're going to be the ones hunting people down.
It's either a defensive mindset or an offensive mindset. Yeah. If you want to,
and you know me, I'm all about the offense.
That's true.
Best defense is good offense, man.
Ooh, sorry. One other rule that I wanted to bring up that I knew right away. They like skipped over it while they were giving the whole intro. When he says you're inactive, but you still touch somebody and there's an electric shock, I was like, that's you're like, that is so broken that you can walk around with no penalty. Like, if you're inactive, yeah, I was like, that's immediately going into every strategy I have. Like, lose a battle, you're just fucking running around looking for
somebody. He totally lied about how strong it was. He said it would knock you out for the game.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was so ridiculous.
Which, that 100% went into my strategy, too. And I'll get more into it when we get to a certain point in the game. But I was like, I'm smarter than Arisa. I could have checkmated.
Yeah, I liked how, like, before we start, and I guess what, Adisu tries to ask him a question, and it's kind of, like, on the concept of what's the real world and what's not. And he just has, like, a really good, interesting, like,
I wrote some of it. I wrote some of it down.
Yeah, if you want to drop the lines.
He says, your world? What is your world? The way you're making it sound like your world must be the real one. That was like the first couple sentences, but those were like emphasized what mostly he was trying to bring home. And he was just saying like, yeah, pretty much like what determines you being the real world. And then that had me thinking, I was thinking maybe Adisu was created in a world of AI, like Free Guy, kind of like Free Guys. And they're all like, cause we've never seen Adisu as a child necessarily. Like he just does his daily routine. And then all of a sudden they're just plucked from their AI world into what would be the real world to fight people who are just fucked up in the head, who just want to go around killing people like purgers.
That would be insane.
So that's how I came up with that theory. And I was like, there's just no way our main character is just like a robot. So, we, like Kyle had mentioned, we get a early showdown between Adisu and Kiyuma. Kiyuma obviously baits Adisu into kind of battling him solo, which kind of lets both of the players get a feel for what the other person is like. And we find out immediately that Kiyuma actually had evenly distributed all of the points between his team members because he views them all as equals, which I thought was just a really nice twist because I was really waiting. I was like, oh, his number is going to be like 999, like, or 9,900. And I was really waiting for it. And then he split it. And I was like, damn, like, this guy's pretty interesting. So, and after that, like after that little battle win, things are looking really good early on, which obviously means things are going to go south for our team quickly. Like they're racking up points. They won a couple battles. They find a couple items. And so the teams have to regroup after the other team is inactive, things like that. And we get a quick showing here of Naragi coughing up blood. And Kiyuma's team thinks up of a plan. Now, did you guys guess what that plan was going to be? Like, did you just assume right away that they were all just going to charge? I feel like that was so obvious. Like, even at the beginning of the game, I'm like, why would you not just charge? Obviously, someone's going to die, but...
Yeah, and I also knew, because right before that, when our team, I'm going to call them our team, when they come back after their successful hunting missions, if you will, and, like, Water Rising just kind of drifts off of the base and, like, runs towards them.
Dude.
And I was like, brother, what are
you
doing?
You have one job.
Yeah,
this could be like, a test.
They just wait 5 minutes for them to walk back to you. Like they all have to come back to the base. Like that's just that right there was just like, okay, this is obviously just a little bit of a premonition for bad things to come with this guy.
Yeah. Before they walked into the game, Water Rising looks at Naragi and he's like, hey, don't slow us down. And Naragi looks at him and he's like, I'm pretty sure you're the slow one. And everybody that was watching was like, fuck yeah. You know, Water Rising's going to ruin this.
Naragi's only one piece of truth all ever.
I don't like Water Rising as much as the next guy, but their strategy for getting into our base, we'll call it, like Kyle said, I mean, that would have beaten anybody.
Oh yeah. But
it would have been an easy
he just
at least
randomly 10, picks who he wants to kill.
I would have picked the naked guy.
Oh, I was thinking of like just holding
one
arm
dong,
on the
bro. I'm going after that. I'm going,
you going after.
After
Dick.
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, so grabbing. I definitely was thinking that too, that Kyle would grab Dick. No, I was definitely thinking that too, that I would be like, all right, why didn't Tata go and pick Kiyuma? But Tata has a line early on. He's like, yo, did anybody like else think that Kiyuma was like really nice. So I think like subconsciously he was like, I don't want to kill this guy. Maybe I'll just kill this guy.
I will say,
if I was Tata, I would have run around and then grabbed the pole sideways and swung around it like a Beyblade.
I was thinking of like holding like one arm and then like using my leg and arm at least for like two contact points and then getting at least two.
I was thinking that, Paul, like you could run around like how you're little and you run around the pole. Like you could have done that at least, but he's, you know, he has no
probably but then, like, everybody.
But I was going to say then, like they one all person, got it. I was going to say, if he's spinning around though, like one person, they just have to like make a little hesitation move and like Tata's not going to see it if he's spinning in circles just trying to touch anything.
Did what? Feet count? Does anyone ever get touched by like did feet
I think that know, your I skin think, has to probably touch.
I think if you bump shoulders, if you, my foot were to touch like their foot, like I think that counts as a battle.
Yeah, because I feel maybe like you gotta try to use as many limbs as possible. You know what?
I was thinking during while I was watching, I was like, they could definitely. I know there's not a lot of options. I mean, they're in a storage compound, whatever the hell you want to call it, but they could have got weapons. That could have helped.
It did say no weapons. There was a sign that said no weapons.
Oh, yeah. I'm stupid.
I feel like that's a lot of the games, honestly, though, right? Like even last season, I feel like I'm remembering when games started, like they just said no weapons.
Yeah, there's always a bunch of stipulations.
But anyway, I was going to bring us back on track unless you wanted to say something, Paul.
No, I was just going to say my strategy for like find a box and then just run, jump on the box and jump over the goalie. And just like Mario at the end of the level, just hug really high up on the pole and be like infinite points.
I guess, yeah, you could have Usagi.
Another person.
Yeah, I was literally thinking of like the alley-oop basketball move where the person gets down on all fours and you jump off their back.
That's not a bad idea. That would be pretty good.
The Mario is literally the perfect imagery. That's exactly what you want to do with it.
Yeah, hugging the top of the pole.
Real top, like real high up on
the Tesla flexion for like magician.
So, my strategy at this point, right, because the one guy sacrifices himself, which I didn't see coming. I didn't think they were going to rush the goalie because I didn't think they were going to fucking kill one of their own. I was like, that's wild.
They knew the terms of the game better, so I was kind of expecting it. Like, they set the game up. Like, they knew what they were getting into.
But at this point, I was thinking, all right, 4-5. You guys have an extra player that's huge. I was thinking, all right, you lose battle, you become inactive. You have four people become inactive. You walk around, find somebody on the other team, touch them. You're both out for the game because that's how we originally described it. It was like the shock would be enough to knock you out. Mm-hmm. The four people do that, and then you have one guy just running back and forth between the base, just getting 10,000 points nonstop. And I was like, easy W, checkmate. But it doesn't work out like that because the shock's really just it's like a taser for like a half a second, apparently.
Yeah, I was disappointed in that.
All right, let me get us back on track here. We get a quick. What pissed me off most about Water Rising, I guess, here is that how casual he was, just sitting around the base before all four of them show up, before the King of Clubs and everyone shows up. He's just sitting there, like acting like he's just like cheering for the squad. I'm like, you are so useless. And then, like Paul said, the four members of the band charge all at once. Three of them touch the base while one is sacrificed. And this was a pretty emotional scene. I did not expect this level. Like, I just kind of thought they were going to blow over it really quickly. But we do get the classic anime backstory of every character we could possibly get to know. And so Kiyuma is clearly hurt. Like, he just lost his best friend. And this was clearly a very emotional scene between all of his band members, especially when they reconvene at the base. And they're all kind of just quietly just thinking, I guess, just knowing that they're not the band that they once were. And then we get the other side of it where Arisu says that they need to start focusing on the items.
Dude, the items was crazy because how the fuck did they find all of them in 2 hours?
Yeah,
that place was huge.
Yeah, it was kind of, and they didn't really like explain the point system of the items either. Like, the points were like random, or were they all specifically assigned?
They were random. Yeah. Well, there was like always going to be 3,000.1, I think 500 or 15.
There was like a certain number of items or whatever. But my question is, did they know where they were because they set the game up? Like Kiyuma's team? Because they at one point they just started rattling off all the items like back to back to back, and I was like, "Did you guys fucking set this up? Because like that's not fair."
They said they were random at the beginning, but you're right; they did get a quick stretch of like three or four items in a row. But now that Kiyuma's team had that 30-point swing, they are now individually pretty much. I think we're led to assume that no matter what, even if they were to evenly split their points, each one of them would be stronger than any individual team member on Arisu. So Arisu, you know, needs to think of something quickly, but he is looking for more items when he does meet the King of Clubs again, who pretty much explains what it means to have lost his best friend. And the whole time I'm just thinking, relax, my guy. Arisu has lost some buddies too. And so you're just preaching to the choir here. But he does manage to steal the fifth item. And so to sum it up, Arisu's team is now down by 12,000 points, and there's only one item left. But of course, when it's crunch time, who are you going to go to? You're going to go to Arisu to come up with a plan. That's exactly what he does. All of
Jordan game six.
Yeah. And so all of, we'll call him Team Citizen, are defending
game seven, dude. They're about to die.
True. It is game seven.
Flu game.
Everything's on the line. But all of the citizens, now that they have a comfortable lead, of course, what their plan is to just defend the base, because that's the only way Arisu's team really has a chance of beating them at this point. And so Usagi manages to pull Gouken aside from the base. They have a 1v1 running away battle, which was like totally lame. Like Usagi like makes this like anticlimactic jump to another shipment container, and then fucking Gouken just jumps and like kills himself. Like, he just completely whiffed, and I was just like, he better not be fucking dead. Like, that's just how he died. He's not
that part. I thought the chase was kind of cool. Like, they're both master climbers. It was pretty cool.
I loved his run. Like, his face and his run was just like so intense. Yeah. It felt like an Attack on Titan kind of like run.
Yeah, he was crazy, and he was screaming the whole time. He has like a line where he's like, it doesn't matter, we're gonna win anyway. Like, I'm just gonna fucking chase this girl down. And so he's obviously the wild card of the
band. Now it becomes a 3v3 at the base, since Water Rising's at their base defending it. So they all charge in, and Kuina manages to pull one of the band members off the base using just like, it was the one that she had fought earlier. They were having a pretty cool little quick fight that they got into right there that got the band member's hand off the base. Arisu gets caught by Kiyuma, but obviously we knew immediately he wasn't going to die because he was actually out of commission. He had never reset himself to be an active player by touching the base in between those breaks. So now Kiyuma is out of commission just for the time being, not out of the game like they had told us at the beginning of the game. He's just knocked down for the time being. And so now it becomes down to Niragi and Uta, who Niragi, pretty smart, spits a shitload of blood into Uta's face and manages to touch the base to get them within 2,000 points now.
Absolutely. So good. So good.
I was like, all right, Niragi, you're showing a little bit of worth. And at this point, too, like he was like smiling with the group. He was like hyped to hear Arisu's plan. I was like getting some vibes. I was like, all right, Niragi, coming in clutch. But so, and the smarter part to this is now Niragi, after having touched the base, has become inactive. And just genius thinking by Arisu to just have Niragi, after touching the base, to just immediately go to Maki, the other guy, which is genius. So now it's one on none with Kuina just staring at the base, and she fucking hesitates for whatever reason. Yeah, she completely choked at that moment. She gets kicked, losing a battle, and now the gap between them is now 3,000. And I was upset, man. I really thought they had it in that moment. Like, I was thinking, like, and just in terms of the episode, I was like, all right, we're winding down to episode two. Like, this has got to be like the final showdown for this game. Like, if we have all these other games to get to, like, to me, I thought this was just going to work. So I actually was like pleasantly surprised in a way to see that the plan didn't work. And so just to get us to the end of the episode before we just open up these notes, the team heads back to base, willing to give up, except for whatever reason, suicidal Usagi, who is just like bent on, you know, finding the last item, which makes no sense to me. But whatever, we'll skip that. Fuck Usagi. I've already made that clear.
Damn, bro. That's a fairly intense reaction to what happened.
It honestly might be clutch that you found it because it put him within 500.
No, right? Okay, totally so clutch. That no, it was clutch. I'm just saying, like, it just her conflicting mindset of like wanting to play games and not wanting to go home is it just bothers me.
No, there's a difference between her wanting to die and her not wanting to go back to the world that they left.
But I think Dave's hung up on before when they were making the plan to go to whatever. Remember, they decided to go to King of Clubs, right?
Mm-hmm. And she was like,
let's vote on it or whatever. Somebody said, let's vote on it. And she was like, well, I guess it's majority vote, right? Like, that's
it. She didn't want
to
fucking.
Yeah,
play.
She didn't seem like she wanted to go. So,
and now she wants
that's
to play.
That's where Dave's coming from, I think.
That's my complaint.
Again, now that they're playing, she doesn't want to die.
It's just conflicting. It's like they should have just not had that scene and this would all be fine for me. But like Kyle said, she finds the last item for 500 or for 2000, which now puts them within 500 points. So just one battle away from being the winners. And then this is what we were talking to earlier, where Naragi's kind of wandering off as the whole team is deflated. They think they've lost even with Usagi's shining hope of finding the last item. Naragi's wandering off, coughing up blood, realizing that his time is up, and then decides to be a rapist again and try and fuck Usagi. And yeah, fuck this guy. I mean, we don't know what happens. It pretty much all that's left is there's 8 minutes left and Water Rising is sweating. That's the episode. So we do hear Usagi call out for Arisu. So where do you guys?
She knows where her fucking bread's buttered at the end of the day. When push comes to shove, back against the wall, about to die, she's obviously going back to Arisu. She's burned him in the fucking convenience store. But
how
come
do you think it's going to end for, like, I guess, like Usagi and Naragi there? Like, do you think Arisu is going to be the one to save him, or do you think Arisu is going to head directly to the base? Like, how do you picture things going?
Arisu, I would say, has no idea what's happening there.
So then, what saves Usagi then in this next episode?
I think them winning. They're going to win because Water Rising is going to pull his bootstraps up and actually touch the
base. Yes, that's Water exactly Rising, what I was about to say.
Yeah, Water Rising, they're going to win and then it'll all. Yeah.
They have, the other team has already said, like, we're just going to chill here and protect this base for the rest of the game. So there's no chance he can win. So why defend your own base? So Water Rising with 100, oh, he doesn't even have 100 points. He has like a bunch.
300, 300, 40.
He has more because he won that. He took all the points from the one dude, right?
Yeah.
Is that how that works? Killed? So he
he only gained 500. You only gain and lose 500.
No. He gained. Actually, you're right, Paul. He gained 10,000 there because the wrist thing, like, will go up. But because he killed someone, like, when he was touching the base, he was up. So they,
that's different. You're right.
They got 3,000, 30,000 points, and then they got 10,000 because he killed someone.
Okay. Sorry, Dave.
No, you're good. No, I was going to say.
I was actually really thinking that Water Rising was going to die and that we're going to have Naragi come into the group and be the guy, the end game guy. But it looks like now with him actually dying with whatever he's coughing up, like, I don't think Tata's going to die. I think he's going to actually have like a big moment that'll quote unquote redeem him for the group. But
I think,
you know,
it could also,
that's fine.
It could easily be that he puts himself on the line and like takes the hit to die.
But then Naragi steps in and like
allowing someone else, as in probably Arisu, to actually touch the base. And then Arisu is going to be standing there, eye contact with Tata of like, holy shit, you just did that. You're about to die. Like all this, you know, that moment. And then Naragi can just fuck off and die on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just don't see it likely that both Naragi and Tata will die.
I want new characters. I want new blood.
But yeah, then on the contrary, like Naragi's last year's guys, that thing is over. He should be dead already.
He's one punch to the gut away from healing over and dying. So I don't know. Usagi might even fight a way out of it, but I don't know. She'd get her head slammed on the pavement.
Yeah,
like,
that was
twice,
fucking
so.
Brutal. That was rough.
She might be out of commission, but I mean, I'm putting it out there that it is not off the table that they do the human stool and jump over the goalie like Mario. I'm saying it could definitely fucking happen.
I can get down though.
That
if it happens,
gross.
I'm blowing up the chat. I'm blowing up the chat.
The human stool. I just imagine a piece of shit.
Mr. Hanky.
That's one way to do it. You just whip out a fat poop in front of them, and they're just like, ew, dude, what the fuck? And you just touch the
base. Honestly, Dave, that's start not a terrible it. Idea.
That's the actual really human stool. Yeah.
The human stool.
You just slinging shit at them.
Naragi used his blood from his mouth. If he was smart,
hey, no weapons.
Lay a dookie.
Yeah, poop is not a weapon.
Yeah. Speaking of shit, I'm going to be sad when Kiyuma?
Yeah.
Kiyuma dies.
Yeah. I mean,
maybe there's some citizen thing where he gets like beamed up into the blimp or something. I don't know. But like, it seems like he might not be around for long. But Paul, you were saying you could see the gag panel. I could see the panel of him like butt naked at the start of the game when he's like on top of the containers with his arms outstretched. Like, I could see that in black and white, like ink on a page.
Yeah, howling.
100%. It's like when Payne's over the hook. The Hidden Leaf Village.
Yo, also, speaking of beams, sorry, Paul, you first, then me.
I just love the camera shots of like them holding up their hands, and it's perfectly just covering Kiyuma's junk, or like it's just always something right there. The camera angle goes so below his belly button. It's like, dude, if the cameraman accidentally like sneezes and it goes down just a little bit, we're getting full frontal. But it was great.
It's not a live stream, Paul.
and the editor misses it.
Yeah, that would be crazy. Made it out of production. It's just his cock.
Yeah.
I was going to... Kyle said beam, like B-E-A-M. I think that it was pretty cool that when Water Rising killed the one guy on the citizen team, they panned up to the sky and showed the laser come like out of the sky into the guy. That was the first time we ever saw that point of view, that angle of that happening. And I just thought that was interesting because it's like, where are they and how is that happening? You know, it just brought up that baseline question that we've been asking ourselves since episode one. So
I thought I think we talked about that a little bit last season at the end. Like, is it satellites or are they actually in like a dome, like a big building? And this is like not the actual city. It's like a replica. Like, we really don't know.
Yeah. I mean, like, are people watching them? Like, people could be watching them. You know, we don't even know how far. Well, we already know people were watching them. Yeah. The game masters.
They're all dead, though.
Yeah. But it could be even further than that. It could be like an actual audience. But now I'm thinking of Squid Game.
Yeah. They're very similar.
I hope it doesn't go that way.
Yeah,
I hope so.
I would almost prefer it to be like what we think of the real world isn't actually the real world, and there's like levels of like consciousness and robotics.
I just don't think it's that deep. I don't think the anime is that deep.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying I would prefer that over like the Squid Game stuff.
Yeah,
that's how I feel right now. But also,
Titan made me realize that anything is open.
So
the we hate Tata so much, but if he was just like a guy in black and white panels, like, we probably wouldn't.
I mean, realistically,
he's like the type of character that he is like in every anime or manga. There is that guy.
Just, and I mean, also realistically, I was literally just gonna say that, Kyle. Is realistically, like, if we're participating in these games, like, that is us. Like,
don't think I'd be like, well, he's nice, fuck that shit.
I probably would. I probably
just
would
in general, like, he's afraid of things, he says the obvious shit that we are all seeing. Like, he's both like a combo of the audience and like the average Joe,
true.
All right.
Like, God, there's no way I'm in that shit. Like, I'm fucking Arisu or Chisia. Like, I'm fucking figuring everything out and doing the damn thing. I mean, maybe after, like, you know, multiple games.
With some experience, though, you change.
All righty, everyone. That is going to be it. There are going to be two questions I want to ask you guys here just really quickly before we wrap this up. My first question is going to be, what do we now
bang and kill?
I was going to say BKM. We haven't done one in a while, but I was thinking more along the lines of just general thoughts of what you think this world is like. Do you think, how do you want to put it? Like, do you think that the game world is the real world? Do you think what we knew to be the real world was not the real world? Like, where do you think we are with the world? Like, now that we have a little bit more information, do you think they were teleported to a completely different universe? Like, does anyone have any like outstanding guesses that they want to put on the page? Because we might get an answer potentially at the end of the season.
I don't know. Honestly, I don't think they gave us enough.
The Citizens and Visas does make it very interesting. But it's just, again, like, they have an exact replica of Japan. Like, how the fuck did they do that?
Yeah, and it's I feel like episode 3 is going to be the real, because we need, I mean, we don't need, I don't want Human to die, yeah. But like that seems like it'll be the time where we get like enough info bit. To maybe make a yeah. prediction. I mean, I hope, yeah, maybe like, are they physically there or not? It seems like yes. they're physically there.
Well, that was goes back into season 1 with the chick with the 2 torpedoes on her chest, who I can't remember her name, who dies in with Karibe and everybody. Yeah. Like she was like, oh yeah, the company I used to work for was like huge technology company about virtual reality. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh well, virtual reality like can't simulate pain this well. So, you know, there is the option still out there that maybe they are actually in a virtual reality. But
is that going to be your guess, Paul? If you had to make a prediction right now, if you're in a game and the game was, guess what the fucking world is? What
I
is
think your vote? I think they got fucking sucked out of the real world and actually thrown into a replica of Japan.
Like a replica game world, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. My other guess would be like they got pulled into the future. And this is like Japan because of all the, how the animals kind of took over the outskirts. They kind of talked about that in season 1, like mm-hmm. nature kind of flooded in with the trees and plants and shit. So maybe it was in the future, but I'm going to go with point. It's a replica.
That's a good point too, with the animals. Like, did we ever get full clarity on like, were the animals transported here, or did they have like stockpiles of animals? Like,
no, we never got it. We got Usagi hunting though, like hunting that boar or whatever. Yes. So it's like natural animals out there.
I just think it adds to the fact, it adds to the idea that we don't know there. That world, the Alice in Borderland world, has been in existence long enough for vegetation and wildlife to overtake parts of former civilization.
Are you thinking are you replica, or do you think this is still the like our world? And like,
I think I'm gonna stick with the class. Like, it's based on Alice in Wonderland, right? She falls in a hole that's like an okay. alternate dimension, and I think it's that. I think it's different.
I actually want to go back from the it's in the future, because one, all the technology, like Kyle said, the electricity, all the technology is still the same. It's not advanced. All the cars, it's not like newer, insane models that we've never seen.
And the news articles
I was going to say, yeah. Usagi's dad, like she saw that news article. How is that in there along with the food that Arisu was looking at to get the flashbacks? Like that was like current day food then too. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna say it's not in the future now, but it's
you
like
just think it's a replica,
but it's probably a replica then.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle,
I'm going with simulation theory. I think they're hooked up to some shit.
Okay. And then my
she is too casual. I think he knows that it's all like fake,
it's all game
fake. Yeah.
So you Dude. But so you think to go off that simulation, you think though if they die in the simulation, they die in real life? Like you don't think there's a chance anyone comes back, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You poop in your dreams. You poop for real.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Last questions will be, since we have a new season started, character stock, who is up and who is down? So obviously for me, I would say Usagi is stock down. And then I would say Kiyuma is hot riser, just topping the charts for me.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like sell all stock in Kiyuma, because
yeah
he dies and Arisu lives, or vice versa. So I would agree, Usagi's going down in my book a little bit, even though she looks fine as hell this season. She's glowing, dude, on screen. It's unbelievable.
I agree.
Like her attitude with Arisu, like, I don't know, that whole relationship switch is just, it's so weird now. I don't like it.
Any stock up? Water rising stock up, Paul?
No, he's still down. He's still down. If he sacrifices himself, then yes, stock goes up for him. Mm-hmm. But I love Arisu. I mean, I think his stock is just going up, because I think he aged up and he looks more like a boss than ever before.
He's seen some shit nowadays. He's been around the block. He is arguably the most prepped person in this whole entire game, probably. So he is always going to be stock up.
I want to say and stock up, and then Usagi's dad stock up, because stock we got another up
for leave some fucking dad. Characters for the rest of us.
No, I'm going to take the whole squad. but the only way I say Usagi's dad is because they referenced him again, and the more they reference him, the more likely he'll play a part later on.
Yeah,
I think that Anne is hot.
Okay, so I'm just gonna put Ann as I'll just put Ann as hot for Alkies, and then Kyle stock up, stock down.
She's hot, dude.
You're Chota in Arisu's flashback when they're eating ramen and he's looking at the models in the manga instead of actually reading the mangas.
Yeah,
fuck that's that. You. Fuck that. You got the virgin, dude.
Anne, I think, does have a stock up in the sense that, or how about this? I'll say that Arisu and Anne are buys in the sense that I want to see Anne's solo journey. And what happens with that? I hope we get like a B plot type of thing where we actually get to see scenes of her and not like we meet up with her again and she just like shows up to save the day in some sense. I kind of want to like experience solitude with her in that way. Probably similar with Chishi a little bit. And then Arisu, because episode 3 and potentially episode 4, which we'll cover in, I guess, the next episode, we'll do a combo of 3 and 4. We're going to get new information for him. And it's going to be, I think, a big episode. Episode 3 specifically is probably going to be a really big episode for him.
Awesome.
I'll sell all of my Kyuma shares to then invest into Arisu shares.
Fair enough. I think that's a pretty smart decision.
Yeah, I'd like to do my stock up and down.
Okay.
You try. You gave you the floor. All you said was Anne's hot.
No, I just interjected. I think that Anne's stock is up. I'll be quick. Anne's stock is up. Arisu's stock is continuously up, and Kuina. I just feel like Kuina is like a really good team player. She gets it done. She's very
useful.
She did
choke though. She did choke.
Yeah, but that's just, you know, it's just like you got to sub her out for a sec, get her in the second half to start. You know what I mean?
Like she'll have a stronger second half performance. Yeah, yeah, for sure. I can see that.
We talked about this last season. Do you guys think Mira is going to be the Queen of Hearts now that we have a solid, we know there is going to be a Queen of Hearts?
Yes.
I'm actually going to say no. I don't think she'll be the Queen of Hearts, but she'll definitely, obviously, she has a very huge role in all of this, but I'm going to put it on the board that she is not the Queen of Hearts.
She could be the King of Hearts, fucking higher level.
Twist, yeah, that would be a little twist for sure. Algie, what do you think? You think she's the Queen of Hearts or King of Hearts?
Actually, you actually mentioned you. I wanted to say this earlier, but you said, "Oh, they're King of Spades." Obviously, we know it's a guy, but I wanted to say we don't necessarily know it's a guy. Like just because it's, I think it's difficulty level, and yeah. I think that she could be anything. But I think that she's probably Queen of Hearts. That's what I think.
That'd be fuck, cool. That would be a great showdown. Just like. The final game they choose is the Queen of Hearts, and it's like full circle back to her kind of thing.
Fucking Mira might be King of Spades the way she's just mowing down everybody.
I take it back that the face cards might be correlation with level of difficulty because I think it's likely that she is the Queen of Hearts and she'll be the final boss.
Well, only more answers to be had coming up with these next few episodes. That's going to be it for our coverage of Alice in Borderland Season 2, Episodes 1 and 2. We will be covering Episodes 3 and 4, 5 and 6, 7, 8, and I think it ends at 8. So be on the lookout for those. We're also covering the shows 1899 and Arcane, both highly recommended shows from the Bingetown citizens. We would definitely highly recommend you check out those podcast episodes. Those are very incredible shows. Feel free to check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Patreon, all at Bingetown TV. Anything else, guys? Any final thoughts?
Yeah. Watch Chainsaw Man.
All right. For the anime watchers, go watch Chainsaw Man. Alki and Paul have been highly recommending it to us. We're probably not going to cover it on the podcast, but maybe we'll slip some conversations in here and there. That's going to be it for us at Bingetown TV.
And read One Piece. Go read One Piece.
Read One Piece.
And thank you for listening.
Thanks, PD.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.